Chapter 28.
You don't like me much, do you?
My father asked me that night. The night before he died. He had the blankets pulled up over him, and he was just a head and a pair of arms floating on the hospital bed, covered in wires and tubes. The sterile room was cold and oppressive, everything in black, white, and gray. A fitting end, I thought. Nif had just stormed out. My father had spent some time telling me she was no good for me, with her standing right there, chewing her own lip off to stay quiet. I deflected everything he'd said. The man was dying, after all. I knew it. He knew it. Then he called her a whore, and she left.
You never kept your promises. I got you that bike.
It took me a moment to realize he was joking. I laughed.
I'm sorry, Adam. I wish I could do and say more. But it's too late.
Don't sweat it. You got bigger things to worry about.
She scares me, Adam. I love her. You were going to be somebody. That day I woke up and found that puzzle sitting on the table. I knew. You were going to grow up to be the man I never was. But this wife of yours, I can see it. She's going to drag you down.
He clenched his lips. Then he said,
She's just like me.
You're full of shit, I said, surprised. I felt angry, too. Nif is as much like you as you're like Oprah fucking Winfrey. He tried to sit up, but he laid back, exhausted.
No. Listen to me. One day you'll see it. But by then, it'll be too late.
I didn't see it. I still don't see it. But he was so adamant. I listened.
I met your mother. When I was vacationing with some friends in Makati, a year before you were born. I don't think I ever told you this story.
You never told me any stories.
She was singing at this club. She was so fucking beautiful, Adam. Her voice was like the waves hitting the beach on a clear night. You know what I mean? The most peaceful, calming thing you ever heard.
I listened in shocked silence. My mom? A singer? I had no idea.
I had to meet her. Me and my friends waited until the club closed, and I asked her out to dinner. Her English was surprisingly good. She said, If you watch me sing three more nights in a row, I'll let you take me out to dinner. Well, we were due to fly out in 2 days, and we were going back to Manila in the morning. But she was so enchanting, I just had to do it.
So, you stayed behind?
Yeah. They were so mad. I hardly had any money left. I was 22 years old and crazy. But I did it. I went to that club every night for the next 3 nights, just like she'd asked. At the end of the 3rd night, she came to me afterwards and said, You can now take me to dinner. And I told her I couldn't. If I spent any more money, I wouldn't be able to get back home. She laughed and took me to her place. She had this postage stamp apartment. She cooked me dinner, and we talked all night. She told me about how she was going to record an album, maybe move to America to make it big.
He coughed for a long time.
We made you that night. The next day, I went home.
Wow, I said, unable to think of anything else to say.
Wow. 3 months later, I got a letter from her. She said she was pregnant, and I was the father. I got so scared. I told your grandfather, and he told me to forget about her. I'd never met my grandfather. My dad never talked about him. He died when I was 3 years old. But I couldn't forget about her. I started the process of bringing her to the States. You wouldn't believe how difficult that was, even though... especially, though, she was pregnant with you. But we managed it, just in time for you to be born. We got married, and for a while, everything was perfect. What happened? I asked, really asking, why did you turn into such an asshole? My father was right. I'm no good, and he knew it. When he told me to forget about her and to forget about you, he wasn't saying that to be a dick. He said it to protect you. To protect you from me. As he talked, my dad kept jamming the button to release the painkiller into his system. But he still had over 20 minutes left on the delay. Once your mother came, I was so happy. So excited to have her. I didn't know what to do. I was afraid of losing her. She tried to sing for a while, but nothing came of it. And I felt so guilty for letting her down. Like it was somehow my fault. She blamed herself at first, but eventually she started to blame me. And she was right. I couldn't keep a job. I spent all of our money on alcohol. I never helped with you. As the years ticked by, she became withdrawn. She stopped singing. Then she stopped smiling. Sometimes I'd look at her and it'd seem like she wasn't even breathing. She was just sitting there, looking off into space. And I'd think, I did that to her. He turned in his bed, so his eyes met mine. I'd never seen him this intense. I had killed her long before she killed me. The doctors had suspected poisoning at this point, but none of that came out until after he died. I had no idea what he was talking about. I don't understand. Why didn't you go to college? You had the scholarship. I saw the letters. You could have gone almost anywhere on their dime. It's complicated. No, it's not. You didn't go because this girl of yours didn't want you to go. That's not true. She never asked me to stay. I remembered the conversation I'd had with Niff at the Nomery just a few weeks before.
You didn't leave, and I fucked up your life anyway.
But she hadn't fucked up my life. No matter how many times people said, it didn't make it true. That wife of yours, son. She's no good, my dad repeated. In less than 8 hours, he was dead. A few days after that, my mom was arrested. The attack would commence at 11 a.m. and was dubbed Operation High Noon. The daylight saving change had occurred the previous Sunday, and the overzealous dumbass who came up with the High Noon title didn't realize that Arizona existed in its own special time zone. Technically, Arizona was in Mountain Standard Time, but the state didn't observe daylight saving. As a result, half the year the state was equal with Pacific Time, the other half with Mountain Standard. Luckily for the military, they operated on GMT. But to the late Captain Jamal Brown, who was originally from Yuma, Arizona, anything regarding Arizona and time zones was a touchy subject. He'd thought the name of the operation was a bad omen. I guess for him, it was. After the operation, the results of the attack would be evaluated. Either way, whether the attack was chalked up as success or not, all military personnel had orders to have their asses more than 75 kilometers from the NEE, non-Earth entity,
by 21:30 GMT or 2:30 PM local time. Captain Brown didn't know explicitly what that meant, but he had a pretty good idea. So did I. What pissed me off was that it appeared they were planning on doing it no matter what happened. It was the worst possible thing that could happen. But it made sense, as much as I hated to admit it. They didn't know what the Grinder was trying to do. Now that the Grinder had the ability to control people and animals from afar, the only way to be sure would be to nuke everything. Still, why wait so long? Captain Brown had wondered the same thing. He'd asked, flat out, if we're going to nuke, why not do it now, before it's too late? The response he received from the colonel chilled him. The current administration has ordered us not to use nuclear arms on our own soil. The way the colonel said current suggested that in the next few hours, leadership might change. Captain Brown said nothing. He didn't like how the president was handling the situation, but still, best to keep his head down and see how it would play out. For all he knew, nuclear arms wouldn't be used. Maybe they were planning on doing something else, perhaps a top-secret weapon, and he was misreading what the colonel was saying. He never got to find out. He'd been sent to harass the Grinder and never made it back. Captain Brown had been brought down at 10:40 a.m., which meant Operation High Noon would begin at any moment. The Grinder was strong, but strong enough to survive an organized, well-planned counterassault? I doubted it. That was what the Grinder wanted, to die and go to heaven. In order to do that, she had to first kill as many people as she could and use their tainted, gristled souls to bring Heaven's Blade to a grinding halt so she could get past it and get in.
You are astute,
the Grinder whispered in my mind. Go fuck yourself, I said, shaken. It freaked me out every time she answered my own thoughts. I traveled to the very top of the highest Hydra tentacle to get a better view. I watched as a flesh golem peeled off the side, emerging like a newborn baby from the Grinder. Then another. I counted 10 of them, all the same. Each elephant-sized creature ran on 4 legs, square in shape with a massive metallic claw attached to their backs. They were like organic catapults. They slipped off into various directions, running into the neighborhoods surrounding the Grinder. I tried to touch the minds of those within before one detached, but there was nothing there. These were all reanimated corpses, recycled to make mindless war machines. Other, smaller golems appeared of various shapes, all disappearing into different directions. Mini-Grinders, the animals that had the ability to detach and reform, rushed off by the hundreds. Most of the monsters were the big cats, but other shapes peeled off as well. I felt lightheaded. It was the only way to describe it, even though I didn't have a physical head. I wasn't sure why, but I suspected it was because the Grinder was losing so much mass, getting smaller as more and more pieces broke off and disappeared into the city. The Grinder's side opened like a massive, dripping maw. Thousands upon thousands of birds shot forth. They flew north, east, and west in 3 distinct groups, a never-ending stream of ink spread across the sky. Even as these birds left, more arrived from all directions. Most of these were seagulls, but I saw and felt lots of ducks, too. They'd land on the Grinder's back and sit there for a few moments, and then take off again. I could feel each one as it absorbed into the fold. The military had begun shooting the birds flocking toward Tucson. Animal memories were a strange thing to grasp as the sense of sight was so much less important to them than the other senses. One seagull had been flying for hours, coming from somewhere along the California coast. It had flown over an interstate, which I guessed was I-8 to San Diego, and a huge 5-mile-long convoy rushed east toward Tucson. The soldiers filled the air with smoke and fire, and 3/4 of the bird's companions fell before the seagulls figured out to veer from the road. The seagull now swelled with a strange, pride-like feeling just after it landed. It and its companions took off again, heading west back toward I-8, this time to seek revenge. Below, the Grinder had stopped moving and planted her center right at the intersection, her still massive bulk spreading like a thick, oblong pancake well into the neighborhoods on each side. Three tentacles raised hundreds of feet into the air, waving back and forth as if to say, "Bring it."